Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
The Vietnam War, it's over.
Your job's just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of spycraft. Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Post-show recaps theater presents... Movies! So many movies as reviewed for you by your friends at Post-Show Recaps. Featuring Grace and Ariel and their incredible movie takes, we hope you enjoy the show!
Welcome back to Post-Show Recaps Theater, where this week we are talking about Nicolas Effing Cage movies. My name is Grace. I'm here with my co-host Ariel. Ariel, how you doing?
You can't see me, but I'm bowing to you with like my fist and my open palm.
Yes. That's great. I love it. once you realize that it was me, your co-host, and not the person driving the boat. But we're not alone. How could we do a Nicolas Cage movie? Not only Nicolas Cage movie, but the most Nicolas Cage movie that ever existed, where Nicolas Cage plays Nicolas Cage. We are here with the one and only
Nicolas Cage.
Imagine. Do you have a Nick Cage impression? You do.
You're here,
right?
With Nicolas fucking Cage.
You know, it's hilarious. Before we started, I was like, Ariel, I kind of want to like do the like Nick F and Cage. And I did the F bomb. And we're like, yeah, but no F bomb. And then you came.
Yeah. I tried to be like a little quiet on the, on the kin.
Put the emphasis on the other syllable.
Yeah. Oh my God, this movie—it's
really
wild. Oh,
it's super fun. Super fun movie. Nick Cage clearly poking fun at himself. Being Nick Cage in Nick Cage movies where people love Nick Cage—it's tremendous. It's super fun. It was great. What an enjoyable theater experience.
I had so much fun watching this movie. First of all, shouts to the great Brooklyn Zed, who is my movie companion for this one. And then we went and saw The Northman, which I believe the two of you are going to be podcasting about, Grace and Ariel, at some point after this.
With DM Philly, yes.
Yeah, and we were like, wow, well, that's some tonal whiplash afterwards. So I don't know. I think The Northman deeply suffered tonally coming after The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent. So I'll have to give that another shake at some point down the line. But gosh, The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent, maybe immediately my favorite Nicolas Cage movie. I don't know how I'm supposed to vote otherwise.
It feels like, and it's such a, it's, you
it
know,
even
if we,
mentions yeah. The Croods. Like,
the Croods too. Yeah.
I did that with Emma Stone.
Yeah. Yeah, I would be super intrigued. I feel like we need to give it some time, perhaps a year from now, when we can like settle from watching Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent, of where this ranks in the top 10 list that we did, Josh, in terms of top 10 Nicolas Cage movies.
Yeah.
Does it beat out National Treasure? I think probably it beats out National Treasure.
I mean, listen, Natty Trash wasn't my number one, for sure. My number one was The Croods.
Well, yours was The Croods.
The Croods won.
Yeah, Croods
won. Well, Ike Barinholtz says the holy trinity of Nick Cage movies, which did end up being ranked 2, 3, 4 in our Nick Cage movie countdown.
He's not wrong.
Con Air.
I mean, I think that any one of those three should be in deep consideration for the top spot. For me, I understand people who feel strongly about National Treasure in a different direction, but for me, it is one of those three action movies of The Rock, Con Air, and Face Off. And I do think that The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent feels like it's like sort of like reverse Godhead stuff. That, like, mm-hmm. this is the movie that springs forth from the little Godheads. I don't know how that works.
Yep.
But, you know, this movie definitely leans on his entire catalog. But I think there are a lot of ways in which it is it's a real companion to 90s action Nicolas Cage, as well as the Nicolas Cage who wants to be considered a serious actor and is a seriously great actor who actually is very good at deeply emotional stuff and is very wildly funny and manages to get to be all of these things in this movie that could just be a joke and nothing more. And I think that the jokes are very, very, very good. And it is often incredibly, incredibly funny. But I think it was also kind of affecting and moving, too. And that was such a surprise.
Yeah,
that was for sure the most shocking part of just like feeling actual emotions. There were parts of the beginning where I was like, oh no, I don't think I'm gonna like this. Some of this is like deeply, deeply stupid. But then to be like, talk about tonal whiplash, to be turned around and feel like honest emotion. And I'm like, oh my God, is this movie trolling me? This is actually very sweet in parts. I was shocked.
Ugh. There's a scene in the movie, which we'll get into later. I don't feel like this is a spoiler, where it's like one of the very first scenes, I believe, where he has to act kind of bad, which I often feel is a good tell whether an actor is good or not. So if you can act badly, it means you can act. And I feel like he nails it in the, you know, the bad Boston over dramatic monologue he gives to the guy that he wants to put him in his movie. I think that's perfect. You can't actually, if people said, oh, Nick Cage is a bad actor, proof that he played a bad actor in this movie is proof that he's actually a good actor.
Yeah, so. I believe that was David Gordon Green himself.
It was.
I was trying to figure out who that was. I was like, this looks like one of those types. Like, I'm supposed to know who this is.
Yeah. So, I mean, we typically do big picture, no spoilers, see it or skip it. Should people go see this movie or should they, you know, you can watch it when you watch it. I mean, I think I know the answer, Josh.
With again the asterisk of as you both always give, of like, if you're comfortable seeing movies, if you feel no movie right now is so good that it is worth, risking yourself.
Oh, the safety. The cover. I thought you were making fun of the fact that normally we'll be doing an action movie. It's like, if you like action movies, you're going to like this movie. Doing an animated feature. Like, if you like Pixar movies, you should go watch it.
If you feel safe enough to go to the movie theater, and if you enjoy Nicolas Cage, if you enjoy an action comedy, like a buddy comedy, then this is one of the best of them. Certainly in a good long minute, I think. And it's just such an interesting companion to some of the stuff that Nicolas Cage has been doing recently anyway. This is like a for sure you got to see it. The good news, though, is like the second this movie is streaming, we're, watching this as the Post Show Recaps patron community is dropping all of our plans to make sure that we are available on the first day that it is available streaming.
That's true.
We will go way out of our way to make sure that we hold multiple nights of watching The Unbearable Weight of Massive.
Yeah, actually, I did mean to bring this up, which I feel like the world, there's been a little bit of like a cultural phenomenon, which I feel like this movie actually like, I don't know, it does do this thing where it's like, we're going to take this actor who has kind of been poked fun at and show that he he can actually make fun of himself and it will work in this way. But I feel like there has been like the PSR world, and maybe I'm totally wrong about this, but was like the first community that I was a part of that like legitimately was like, no, Nick Cage is great. And he's really good. And he's done stuff that is maybe not like peak cinema, but who cares? That's really fun. But like, I don't know. It feels like it's, you just were like, yeah, I want to watch a Nick Cage movie on the Discord one day. And that's how this whole like the PSR community, I feel like, was like appreciating Nick Cage before this movie came
before it was cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Before it was cool. We're hipsters. Yeah. Yeah. Nick Cage hipsters. But why Nick Cage for you, Josh?
It's all right.
I don't know. I mean, I think that we talked about this a bit in our top 10 Nicolas Cage movies podcast that we did earlier in the month of like, there was a time where I thought that Nick Cage kind of sucked. Mm-hmm. And I was really getting a great hate into City of Angels specifically. And Meg Ryan has not quite had the bounce back that Nicolas Cage has in my estimation. And then it was Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans, where I saw that. I was like, okay, he's really gunning it. Like, he's really going for stuff. And I think I've been wrong this whole time. I began my process of reevaluating, and there's still so much Nicolas Cage that I have not seen, that I definitely feel like I have a lot to make up for, which is frustrating for the many people who wrote in. And there were a bunch who were like, you haven't seen Raising Arizona yet, you psychos?
I know.
You terrible people. And for me, it's more like, well, no, that's exciting that I have that waiting for me. And that's don't plan on it being waiting for me for too long. But yeah, I don't know. He's just, I think that he, in interviews around this movie, has been talking a lot about how making this movie was really terrifying for him. That he really did not know that this was the right thing for him to be doing.
It's a risk. This is a risk.
It's a big risk.
Making fun of yourself is a big risk, I think, in a movie.
Yeah, and he's like, there is this line to which I think that the film itself is sending Nicolas Cage up, but is also really appreciating the earnestness of the guy. And I think a lot of his, if it wasn't exuding and if it wasn't transparent in all of his performances, especially because, as he himself acknowledges in this film, he makes a ton of movies, though he wants to make sure that everybody knows that it's because he's working and he loves the work and this is his job and you're annoying me. That like he has thrown himself into all of this stuff. It has not always been readily apparent, because a lot of times the movies maybe are bad or don't live up to the work ethic that he is putting into it. But I think reevaluating that stuff, especially in light of not just this movie, but a lot of the meta around it and the press around it. And I think it's just so clear that he's just such an earnest person. It seems like he's just such an earnest individual. And I think that, combined with a lot of his just innate idiosyncrasies, makes him a very endearing person to want to watch and root for, and laugh with and laugh at in sometimes unequal measure. But I think in this movie, it is by and large laughing with him. And the times that you are laughing at him, he has at least like put on the pads, you know, like the safety equipment. It's like, yeah, you can
Paddington,
laugh at me about
Paddington
this.
2, the pads?
The
Paddington 2s. Best movie ever. Or at least third best movie ever.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the top 10 podcast, and I am one of those people that appreciates Gone in 60 Seconds. And I think it's a good example of him just like putting on his performance and just being essentially himself. And I love that in this movie, they give him a very sweet storyline, because it's a great way to, you know, it's a very easy emotional on-ramp to like what you want to feel for him going into the movie and going through the movie. And it's really effective here. And honestly, to have Sharon Horgan show up, I was like sold immediately.
Yeah. Yeah. She's great. Yeah. I liked her. I liked Addie. I liked just, you know, sort of the entire, you know, existence of his family, which is not his actual family life, IRL. And he has talked in interviews about like, this is the biggest way in which the character he's playing is not anything like him, that he considers himself like really like, very, very involved in his family and with his kids.
The family man. He's a family man.
Yeah, and a weatherman. Right. you know,
just ask Tia Leone.
So, but I really liked that storyline, and I think that you're right. I think Sharon Horgan, especially as Olivia, and there's a scene deep in the movie. I know we're not in major spoilers yet, where she really brings it.
She kills it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I think. Well, Ariel, very quickly, do you, you know your recommendation? See,
yeah. I mean, absolutely. Yeah. I was, and I was one of those ones that was like worried, even in within the movie, worried. I was doing the whole cringe, can't look at the screen. My secondhand embarrassment is like super, super activated. And by the end of the movie, I'm like, by gosh, they've done it. They did it.
Yeah.
They got me.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. I agree. I think it's super fun. Again, yeah, this caveat, the safety caveat, if you, you know, if you're comfortable going to the theaters, it's super fun. You know, it's like action movie-y. We're going to talk about spoilers a bit. Like, the opening scene is not Nicolas Cage. It's very much like we're in a, like, mafia crime thriller, folks, like, immediately. So there's some stuff in there for everybody, I think. I think it's well worth watching. I think most people will come away with it appreciating Nick Cage. So yeah, let's jump into it. Let's spoiler.
Spoilers. You know,
where should we go? Yeah, do a little spoiler. Give people a second to get out their phones. But where should we start with this?
Effing spoilers.
I do have to say that maybe is like my the weirdest part of the movie is that like there's a second version of Nick Cage. And
this is incredible.
This is great.
So there had been I think that, you know, reports about this had started leaking out once there were South by Southwest screenings and then press screenings and all the press starts coming out that you did hear a little bit if you were paying attention to that stuff that Nicolas Cage is not just playing Nicolas Cage, but he's also playing Nicky, who is this younger, wild at heart era version of Nicolas Cage who wants to direct the real brick and mortar Nicolas Cage towards being a movie star again.
Yeah.
And so he's sort of like the devil on his shoulder, and there is no angel unless you want to say Javi is his angel, which I think you could.
You could.
I think you definitely could say that Javi is his angel and is trying to tell him that there's so much wrong in the world. You can't turn your back on your gift because you are providing light in an increasingly terrible place. I feel like that is some angelic words of wisdom from an incredible Pedro Pascal in this movie.
He's really great.
I think that's going to go underspoken is that obviously this is a remarkable Nicolas Cage movie, but it is a terrific Pedro Pascal movie as well.
Yes.
But I think that the big spoiler, maybe if you didn't do any of that extracurricular reading, is that there's this other Nicolas Cage who he makes out with at one point.
He does make out with him.
I hated Nicky in the beginning. Like, when it first happened, I was like, immediately out. Like, visceral reaction. I couldn't deal with this. And by the end, I was like, oh, Nicky. Like, it's just like, I totally grew to understand what he was doing and, like, his major purpose. Again, like just another one of the miracles of this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. So as I said, this movie does not start with like a Nicolas Cage scene. It actually starts with like a woman. I guess it does. She's watching Con Air.
It literally starts with the end of Con Air. So I
guess Con Air.
Yeah. If you haven't seen Con Air before you've seen The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent, you are going to find out what happens to Cameron Poe and the bunny.
Yeah.
They make it.
So yeah, finishes at the end of before this woman who's watching the movie gets kidnapped and abducted. Like, okay. And we cut to Nick Cage. Not doing great. He's living at a hotel, he's divorced from his wife, his relationship with his daughter is not great, although he does write her a beautiful song for her birthday. Plays it on the piano.
We drove through the desert together.
Oh God. This is a terrible song.
It's so bad. Yeah. Yeah, he's pretty drunk at this point. But he gets offered $1 million from his agent, Richard Fink, played by Neil Patrick Harris. This
was probably my least favorite thing was Neil Patrick Harris being in the movie, not playing himself. Like, I feel like this is a role that has to go to a character actor who is going to be like, it will be recognizably a that guy or whatever, but it can't be NPH. But I think that actually I'm now talking myself back into it a tiny, tiny bit.
Yeah.
Because Neil Patrick Harris kind of did what Nicolas Cage is doing in this movie before Nicolas Cage did it by being in the Harold and Kumar movies as himself.
That's true.
As like an extraordinarily heightened version of
NPH.
That's true.
So maybe it's an ode to that.
there is something that's kind of fun about that. I mean, this movie really knows what it is. The plot of the movie is like the structure of the movie as well. The plot of the movie is also the plot of the movie that they're trying to make within this movie. So it is on so many different layers. It is just like unfolding various versions of itself. So I feel like maybe having some winking and nodding towards Neil Patrick Harris there. I wonder if that's intentional now.
Can I just say, I'm really not sure what Neil Patrick Harris is. He just made some wild, he's making the most interesting choices post How I Met Your Mother, which is like almost like 8 years ago now, but like he just was in the Matrix.
I was about to bring up, like, I didn't love him in that Matrix. Like,
he's just in the Matrix. He did the whole, he's a series of unfortunate events. He's Count Olaf. Apparently later this year he will be in a movie called Billion Dollar Babies, the true story of the Cabbage Patch Kids. I'm not sure what is MPH doing.
I think he's just leaning into being a villain. I don't know.
Maybe he's not really a villain in this movie, though.
Well, not in this one, but in all these other ones you've mentioned.
Yeah. That's true. So yeah, he gets offered $1 million to go to a birthday party. Javi, be the guest of honor at his birthday party, and Nick Cage decides, because life is not going particularly well at the moment, that he will decide to retire from acting. This will be his last engagement, I guess, sort of as an actor. But him and Javi kick it off. They get along that once they get over the blunder.
They have a very awkward start because he is being ferried to Javi's house by Javi, but doesn't know that that's what's going on. Until it's way too late, and he's said all sorts of terrible things on the phone about Javi in front of Javi.
Listen, if Javi wants me to sleep with his wife, or sleep with him, or watch
me sleep with her, like, I'm not gonna do that. He's not gonna do that because just tell him that no, I'm Javi.
And that's where we get the infamous, fist to palm.
And they tease it in the trailer, and you think you know, like, he's meeting Javi, but it's actually so much worse in the movie because it goes on for so long.
Well, the boat, he like picks him up in the boat and they travel over, he's on his phone. But I think what works well in this movie is the earnestness of Pedro Pascal's Javi and how much he just generally loves Nicolas Cage from like basically the moment that they meet. He's just like loves him, which then, you know, works later in the movie where we think maybe Javi doesn't, is up to some no good shenanigans. But particularly they bond over their love of The Cabin of Dr. Caligari. Well, what's your favorite movie? He's like, well, first Face Off. He's like, oh, thank you. That's so nice. How genuine. And then he rounds out his top three with Paddington 2.
Yes.
Which Nick Cage cannot believe.
Which, I mean, I think it's no longer at 100% on Rotten Tomatoes, but it was for a long time, if I'm not mistaken. It was like the top reviewed movie ever. It's an extraordinary movie, Paddington 2.
I think Twitter
came for the one pulled out guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that I love the weirdness that it's like the sequel movie is like the best. It's like this bear movie, and then you watch, you're like, it can't actually be that good. Like Nicolas Cage, and you watch Paddington 2 and it's incredible. Yeah. So
I haven't seen it. I have to watch it.
Whoa. Speaking of like people playing bad guys, Hugh Grant, excellent turn as a villain in Paddington 2.
Yes.
Maybe his best work.
Do I need to Paddington 1 before Paddington 2?
I did not Paddington 1.
Okay.
But you should.
And I just Paddington 2'd.
How did you understand the backstory of Paddington?
They kind of tell you. They like have an opening scene that sort of like explains where Paddington comes from, and then you're sort of just like in media res with a London that fully accepts the existence of Paddington. And I was just in it at that point.
I think they do that in Paddington 1 though, and I'm pretty sure.
I didn't need to see Paddington 1.
No,
I kind of get it.
It's so good. It's so good. I think there's.
Are you a Paddington purist? Where like the first one is better?
Not really. Nicole Kidman, I think, is the if I'm not mistaken, is the villain in Paddington 1.
I have a lot I could talk about with Nicole Kidman.
Yeah, I was just about to. I forgot that we were talking about this movie and not The Northman.
So they're bonding. They're great, but Nicolas Cage gets confronted by, very weirdly, Tiffany Haddish and Ike Barinholtz, who play FBI agents Vivian and Martin.
How great is this movie to have them here. She's playing like, you know, essentially a law enforcement person, just like an after party. Yeah. He was an after party. It's so much fun to have them here.
I didn't realize, maybe I was just too enamored with Nick Cage to focus on the subtleties of some of these other characters. But in checking the Wikipedia now, Tiffany Haddish and Ike Barinholtz's characters are married.
I didn't know that. I did. That's not.
I did. That's not proclaimed in the movie at all. Down with that,
Vivian and Martin attend.
The first time we meet them is like she's like they see Nick. Martin sees them get off the plane. He's like,
they're partners. Is that even allowed? I don't know.
The FBI. I don't know.
It doesn't matter.
And this is where they're getting to the argument about like, what movies have you seen him in? And he's like, I am 40. Why would I have seen The Croods? Like,
yeah, I don't think not like I've been married to you for 5 years. Why would I watch Croods? You know, there's no, I don't know. I don't see it.
Yeah. And they would know what movies they watch. Right.
Yeah.
That's so weird that they're married.
I don't understand it, but the screenwriter, one of the screenwriters, the co-writer, is also last named Aten. Something about attendance. I don't know what the joke is.
They're in the movie. They attended the movie.
They attended the movie. That's the joke.
So they rope Nicolas Cage in. They Javi is so basically he is the head of a crime syndicate. He also runs an olive company.
Yes.
Separate.
Yes.
And the crime and basically the girl that was kidnapped has been kidnapped to force somebody who is going to win an election out of the election so that the crime's puppet politician can win the election.
And all of the CIA's intelligence points to Javi, who has become very close with Nicolas Cage because of their mutual appreciation and respect for each other's cinematic sensibilities. And Javi's borderline, and by borderline, I mean complete obsession with Nick Cage.
Justifiably so.
That this man is just like this out-and-out, objectively bad, horrific cartel leader. And Nicolas Cage is like, no, I'm vibing with him. He's not. And they basically say, wait, you're trying to say that because you're an actor, you can suss out that he's not a bad. You mean
like disagree with the mountains of evidence that like people and we've compiled?
And he's like, yeah. If you're asking me if I trust that over my nouveau shamanistic acting method, you're damn right I do. That got like a bit of like a pop in the movie theater for me. Of like, hell yeah, Nicolas Cage.
Yeah,
I think probably the point where I'm like, yeah, I think this is fun. I don't know if I was feeling the exact same way that like, ooh, this could be cringe. I feel like when he's like, yeah, I could become a CIA, like a spy for the FBI. I was like, yeah, okay, I'm in.
This is fun. But he needed to be right about Javi. And I'm really glad that he ends up being right about Javi. I think this is a lot worse if it turns out that Javi is, you know, because then it's just the interview, right? You know, and so it's
right.
Not.
And then what happened to their connection in that case?
And also, I think this movie has to. Doesn't have to, but like I think this movie ultimately really, really succeeds because it is a very positive thing to say about the power of cinema and the power of acting and the power of Nicolas Cage specifically. That I think he needs to be right as far as his judgment of character. He needs to know story and acting and motivation as well as he says he does. And if he's wrong about that stuff, then it's a really kind of depressing movie that this ends up being, or ends up at least like veering a little bit more towards being like a dark comedy about Nicolas Cage, which is not a celebration. And so I think if this was going to be a successful celebration of Nicolas Cage, he absolutely had to have it right about Pedro Pascal. And I'm thrilled that he gets it right. I would have been heartbroken if he was wrong. There's just so much good stuff about their friendship together too, that I would have been devastated if that wasn't all real.
Yeah. And I not only like, is he right, but he's so continually confident that he's right. And that works too, because he's at the birthday party, but then decides to stay longer. I guess at the birthday party, that's where he has to go and get the intel where he accidentally the pad on his hand that he was going to use for the guard. He wipes his forehead. This is also tremendous. Yes. Like very, very good. Where he's like, I think I wiped my forehead. I'm like, you wipe your forehead? He's like, I'm actually not exactly
sure. Are you sure?
He's like, no, I'm pretty sure I didn't. I love how quickly he can like be sure that he did not wipe his forehead. Mm-hmm. But this whole thing where he's, you know, infiltrating to get the, I don't even know what he's infiltrating. He's trying to get the cameras. They're trying to get into
this was
the cameras.
This was heart stopping stuff. I was like, am I watching Alias? Like, this
literally
is so
his
good.
Heart was
at the show about a spy.
Yeah, I was like, this is, I can't believe I care this much. Like, it's just, I was so surprised. And like, he's so good here. And of course, the comedy of like him barely making it. And then Tiffany Haddish with the all time action to wake him up. It's so good. It's so good.
So there's that scene, you know, and so he decides to stay longer and he'll sort of like be continuing to try and infiltrate to get more information. He also has to, they believe the girl's on the compound, so he's going to stay and try to look for the girl on the compound. But they decide they're going to write a movie together. They're going to write this movie that Javi's been working on. I mean, this scene, I saw it in the trailer, at least a bit of it, is when they decide to do LSD together. Have an awakening and figure out their movie.
I don't know why I didn't know that there was going to be an LSD scene in the movie, but I missed it. And I think that the LSD scene in this movie is one of my favorite drug trip scenes in recent movies.
It's
at
pretty
least.
Strong. Yeah.
Because in no small part, and especially with this movie featuring Nicolas Cage, that like it would have been so easy for this to be like a like an Anchorman, we're going to Pleasure Town type of sequence, you know?
Yeah.
And instead, this is a character focused adult drama, right? Let's not forget that this is a movie about two characters. It's very focused on them and it's an adult drama. And rather than leaning on massive amounts of special effects or doing anything super trippy and surreal in that regard, the whole totality of the LSD sequence hinges on the performances. There's no special effects. There's we're not seeing anything bizarre unless you think that the redheaded gentleman and the person he was with were bizarre.
This poor guy's eating ice cream. Yeah.
That's about it. Other than that, it's all about Nicolas Cage and Pedro Pascal selling the paranoia of the two of them and selling the separation of the two of them you're not gonna leave, I'm not leaving you, soldier of it all, you know. It's all about the acting and has absolutely nothing to do with any sort of like bright technicolor or anything. It's so fun. It's just such a fun part of the movie. Yeah.
And there's so many ways for this to go wrong. You know, you mentioned other, it's been done a bunch before. In a lot of cases, we have seen it go wrong. And for here, like when Pedro Pascal is like, I'm too heavy. Like, it's just, it's so funny. It's just, it's working. And for him to like stay at that level consistently with Nick Cage of all people, it's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
The climbing over the wall scene, I'd seen that in the trailer and I still thought it worked very well, knowing that like then you're like leading up to it, you're like, I was like in my mind, I'm like, how are they going to get there if Nick knows that thinks that Javi might be the bad, and then they're doing this whole thing where Nick is like, no, Javi is good, I don't, you know, whatever. So that moment feels pretty genuine and it's so funny, and that happens. And then they get to the two men who are sitting, like, have they been watching us? And the paranoia that they have, thinking that these two men are watching them. And then to cap off that scene with, like, I mean, like, just look at him and do a laugh. Like, giving Javi the acting advice. And then the laugh that Pedro Pascal turns and delivers to these two men is horrifying and hilarious. And it got
unhinged.
Me. It's so good.
Unhinged.
It is unhinged. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a delight. It was great. And I believe then this is... because he had caught him right before he went to LSD, he wanted to see the room, the mirror room. He does show him what is in his mirror room. And we'll find out what's in the mirror room after we take a quick break to hear from our sponsors.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
All right, we're back. Let's find out what's in the room. What's in the room? It's a Nicolas Cage.
Hi, Nick. Yeah.
Yeah, he's, you know, and we're supposed to believe at this point that, like, potentially this is the room that shows that Javi's, like, a bad guy. And he's like, are you sure you want to see this? Even though it might change the way you feel about it.
Oh, my God. I don't know what I expected. At this point, it was probably one of my most nervous moments in the movie where I thought, like, we're going to go in and the kidnapped person is going to be in here. Yeah. And instead, it is, I can only describe it as a room that I would like to live in.
if your birthday, just passed, otherwise anything in the room would have worked for your birthday, I believe.
Single thing. It is the world's premier Nicolas Cage museum.
Yep.
It's got the nerve gas pearls from The Rock.
Uh-huh.
It's got the bunny from Con Air.
Yeah, the bunny. Yeah,
it's got the golden guns from Face Off, which are very important to this movie.
Not just the guns, a full wax figure of Castor Troy from Face Off.
You used the word like horrifying before. This is pretty horrifying here. This like wax figure.
I love though that Nick offers to buy it for $6,000.
Yeah. He's like, absolutely. I know why you have this.
Yeah,
I would say this would make a good escape room, but then I feel like Josh wouldn't want to escape. So
it would be a bad escape room.
Yeah,
yeah. Our clients have been in there for just days.
Yeah, no one has ever escaped.
Yeah, it would become an escape room where I would have to defend myself from being dragged out of the escape room.
That's right. This is where Vivian is like Nick is still. No, Javi didn't do it. I don't, it doesn't make sense. Vivian's like, figure out how to work the kidnapping into the script.
Yeah.
That will unlock everything.
Yeah.
That would be great.
The CIA and the cartel of it all, and like them fully misunderstanding Javi, who is not the head of the cartel at all, is just like great metaphor stuff, right? For the process of movie making.
Right.
And so Tiffany Haddish and Ike Barinholtz are, straight up, executive producers who have no sense of creative delicacy, right? So here she is being like, just work in a kidnapping into it so you can bring it up more easily and feel them out. And like, you need like the marketing hook. And that's what he says. Like, if you're talking about a marketing hook, yeah, you have to get butts in seats. But, to the point that he's like, he's going to see right through it because this is terrible. It's just like creatively completely bankrupt. And so he brings it up with Pedro Pascal. Pedro Pascal is like, you're lying to me. Like, this isn't you.
It sounds like a totally different movie.
You're
Nick.
Ruining this. I love that commentary. I think it's really, really, really smart.
That's really good. I didn't think about it.
This felt like the equivalent.
Yeah.
yeah, this felt like the equivalent of like, yeah, like studio exec notes where it's like, okay, now we need to pivot and it's actually about climate change and you need to find a way to like make it about that. And they did, because they're true artists.
Yes. So because Javi, who can see right through Nick, that something is wrong. Why would you suggest this? It doesn't make sense. Creatively, you're kind of creatively bankrupt. He flies in his wife and daughter, who, as we learned earlier, is having a little bit of a rough time. He's divorced from his wife and his daughter. She's trying to get her to watch movies, and she doesn't want to watch those movies. She thinks they're boring. And so they're floating. Have a nice lunch where it gets rather intense and rather real rather quickly. And again, I thought the emotion, you know, in this movie, this could easily not work in the scene where they're sort of saying like, yeah, no, I don't want to watch those movies. That you try to make me watch those movies so that you'll hope I like them and then I'm exactly like you. Like, well, that is some real stuff that Addy is spitting. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sharon Horgan, I already shouted out. Like, she's so good. Love her from Catastrophe forever and ever.
I have to see that. I still have to watch Catastrophe.
She can basically do no wrong in my book. And then the daughter, I didn't realize till after, Lily Sheen, daughter of Kate Beckinsale and Michael Sheen. So like, she has a little bit of insight into what it is to be like a famous child.
All right. I'm just wiping some sweat off my brow there. A little concerned of where we were going. Although Nicolas Cage had the very endearing Charlie Sheen story recently of like the, we're looking for a square shaped tubular pasta.
Yeah.
Some tiger blood tomato marinara.
Yeah, sauce. With Nick and Charlie, I guess, were tight.
Well,
I don't know.
Yeah. The other Sheen.
Uh huh.
Yeah. So yeah, dinner, lunch happens, and yeah. Wow, this is even worse than I thought. This is bad. Yeah. So I believe this is where. This is where he loops in his wife. Is like, don't worry, I'm now working as a spy for the FBI.
Yeah, I work with the CIA now. I'm into spy craft.
Sorry, they're CIA. I don't know why I keep calling FBI CIA.
Yeah. It's fine. It's all the same thing. So they're all cops, okay? He's now a super spy, and it's gonna be all right. And you guys need to get like, and he's working this through with Vivian. Vivian's like, you're gonna have to kill him.
Yeah, you're gonna kill Javi. Now
you have to kill him. And again, this is like the executive producer telling you like, you have to kill this thing that is the heart of your movie. You have to, as Nick and Javi are saying, like, what if this movie is about us? You know, is like the whole point of the character-driven adult drama that they're trying to make. And so the executive producer is coming in and saying, you have to kill one of the two stars of your movie.
Yeah.
And Nick's like, I don't want to do that. And like on the other side of this equation is the cartel, and they're like the actual cartel leader, who is, you know, messing with this guy who just wants to be making olives and can't quite get at the game.
Yeah, this is also revealed that Lucas is actually the head of the CIA. He took over when Javi's dad died, so it's not Javi who's in charge. It's actually Lucas. Yes. He's a bad dude.
Right before
Nick Cage finds out he needs to kill Javi, he is talking to himself in the mirror, and he's basically just like, yeah, maybe I'll be a spy for the CIA. Like, it's his future career. He's retired from acting. Yeah, full career. Spy, CIA spy, Nick Cage. Mm-hmm. What if he is a spy? What if that's a true story?
But they don't like it. Like, neither of them like this because now they're both being ordered to kill each other. And neither of them wants to do that. They know that that's not the story. But maybe they're willing to do it in order to stay alive in their respective fields.
Yeah, that's right.
So to speak. It's like, all right, fine. I'll kill off this major thing that matters to me so much in this, you know, to my creative vision, because if not, I'm just going to get eaten alive anyway. And like, I'm not going to have anywhere to go.
Like, if this was like a better call, if this is like in the Breaking Bad universe, both of these, like one of them kills the other. And then the show is about them having to live with like the trauma of like, yeah, I gave up my best friend to like fulfill this terrible life I'm living. But not this movie. This movie is, and this is probably my favorite sequence of the movie, is where for no real reason, like in some like, last bastion of like, maybe we're they trade shoes. They notice each other's shoes, and they very much like each other's shoes. So they trade shoes. And then after they've traded shoes, they then go out and then both pull guns on each other before realizing that they don't want to kill each other.
I love Ariel. I love that they say, do you want to trade shoes? You mean permanently?
I really love these.
What kind of friends are we?
Yeah,
we're
I thought
just
of
trading for the moment, or are we permanently trading?
I thought of you, Grace, because one of the shoes is Gucci brand. And I was like, oh my God, is somebody going to do an Italian accent here?
There's a real firecracker.
So firecracker.
Poppy,
but they're the. This is the love. This is the love story of the movie, right? The platonic love story. We were just talking about this on the Russian Doll podcast, and you know, with a different set of characters. But when it's like, when it's true love, it doesn't matter that it's not romantic. It just feels right, and it's one of the many miracles of this movie.
It's the bromance, platonic love.
Yeah.
It's so good. So then they get shot at. Lucas is like, "Hey, you're never gonna kill each other."
He has them set up. Tailed, and it's great because earlier in the movie, Javi drives him to this exact spot to like wake him up basically and pretend like they're being like chased by a general and to try and get him to like actually like show some acting and like show some joie de vivre here. And he does. And now they are actually being shot at in the same exact spot. So that's really, really fun.
And then you get the little bit of tension because now that they've reviewed, they've like sort of outed themselves as like, you know, not exactly being on the up and up. I was like, yeah, I would run, but these shoes have no ankle support. Mm-hmm. And I love, it's so good. So Javi's like, there's a car, their Jeep is like across the field. And he's like, you go get it. I've seen you do your own stunts. You can drive the car. You were gone in 60 seconds. You didn't realize, you go and do it. And they're like arguing over whether he should go do it. He's like, okay, fine, I'll do it. He's like, you're really going? Okay, well, I'll come with you. I'm not going to like let you go by yourself. It's so cute. They're so great together. It's really good chemistry between Nicolas Cage and Pedro Pascal.
Have you read anything about Nicolas Cage's thoughts on Pedro Pascal?
No, I have not.
I believe it was in his Reddit AMA where he's like, he's great. He's a terrific actor. He has a bit. This is Nicolas Cage talking. Nicolas Cage is like, he has a Pedro Pascal has a very strange sense of humor. Like, I can't tell if he's being serious and like finding something to be odd or if he's like joking around and messing around. So like there's almost like in real life a little bit of like that they don't fully understand each other, which I think makes for really great scene partners to some degree. Opposites attract and all of that. Right. So the Reddit AMA is really, really great with Nicolas Cage. It's so worth reading if you haven't yet. And that's one of the things that really tickled me in there was him just talking about Pedro Pascal had like this weird thing. Let's see if I can't find exactly what it is. Reddit AMA, Nicolas Cage. I'll track this down because this is worth getting.
I imagine it was really fun for Pedro Pascal to like have this challenge to go up against this like this figure, and it's his movie, Nicolas Cage, and he has to really rise to that occasion or sink, some would say. But obviously he's up to the task.
This is what he says. He says, first and foremost, Pedro Pascal is a genuinely nice man. You couldn't ask for a nicer, more pleasant person to work with. Second, he has a very unique sense of humor. It's the kind of sense of humor where I don't know if he's really making a joke or he isn't making a joke. Such as a comment about the appearance of a cabbage in a cabbage field. And it made me wonder if he was a method actor and was in character and adding a kind of confused dimension to the Javi role, or if he genuinely thought the cabbage was amusing. I'm still confounded by this. I mean, who makes a joke about cabbage except him? It's just not funny. That's the Nicolas Cage summation of Pedro Pascal.
That's amazing. Wow.
Yes, incredible.
I did not have cabbage on the bingo card of that story.
Yeah, that's Nicolas Cage and Avatar The Last Airbender shaking hands.
Look at this amusing cabbage. That's Pedro Pascal. That's incredible.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
That's great.
He's so method.
Yeah.
Why is that? Anyway, I love it. I feel like there's a world in which like people are like, you know, Nicolas Cage guy is a little weird. You find you know, and him being like, yeah, Pedro Pascal, pretty cool. I love it.
Yeah.
So I think the movie really ramps up from like, especially this point. This is where so they reconvene, and Nicolas Cage's wife, they met because she's a makeup artist, and they decide for her to use her makeup artist skills to send Nicolas Cage undercover as the criminal, but not the criminal, but it's another criminal organization
like Sergio,
that Lucas is going to partner with. So who has been away for many years, and nobody
no one has seen him in 15 years. And so, like, when they're trying to come up with, well, what's the plan going to be? Because they've kidnapped Cage's daughter, and the other person is kidnapped as well, and we got to go and find them. And Pedro Pascal, we walk right in. This is because, like, Nick and Javi are kind of fighting right now.
Yes.
So Nick is like, oh, well, that's a very dramatic line, Javi. That's like the actual plan. And this is when it comes up that, like, no one has seen this guy in 15 years. And Olivia is a makeup artist. And Nicolas Cage is like, I become Sergio. And like, immediately he's in.
He's in. Yes.
We get our Italian. Like, I got the payoff to my House of Gucci call. Yeah. I was like, yes, it's happening.
Yes. Yes.
It almost gets, the cover almost gets blown immediately. His ear almost gets ripped off. I was actually tremendously nervous, thinking that he had immediately, like, figured out that it was Nick Cage, but he actually is just, like, trying to be some power move criminal mafia boss. And they take them to the location where the kids are. And in another epic moment from the kid, when he holds Lucas hostage to let everybody else go. I think it's actually badass moment from Nick Cage in this movie. Yeah. I mean, I know it's nothing real in the cage, but it was a great moment.
Yeah.
He looks really cool. Javi rolls out of the car, uses the golden guns to, like, let them get away. He gets shot. I thought he might die. Although classic movie, we didn't see the body. So
I totally thought he was going to die. I was really upset.
Yeah. And Sharon Horgan again gets to have, like, a badass action moment where she's like, you're not going to kill me. Like, with the bad guy. She's so good. I was like, yes, I love this for her. Again, I was not expecting this of just her. Like, she gets to do the makeup thing and be important. And she's so confident immediately, like, against Nick Cage playing this role. I loved it for her.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really good. So they get the girls out, then they manage to, how does he get away from everybody attacking him? Is it his wife? I honestly can't remember.
Then Javi comes back and saves him. Like when Nick is holding the guy hostage, then Javi comes back and shoots him.
Right.
So they get in the car and they're racing the American embassy. Lucas is in pursuit. And they crash into the embassy, and then Lucas holds Nick Cage at gunpoint, and then we get this epic scene where there's a knife. They kept pointing at the knife with the camera. Throws the knife, and Nick Cage stabs Lucas, and then is completely
or does he? I mean, we don't know. The movie does this incredible thing where the climax of what's happening to Nick Cage and him trying to defend his family here against this cartel leader blends in with the fiction of the movie that he and Javi made. And so you don't know how this played in like the quote unquote real life of the film. Because now all of a sudden here's Demi Moore.
And clearly this movie has been directed by Michael Bay, because the camera and the flare and, like, the filter that they're using, I'm like, oh my God, it's a Michael Bay film.
They're pointing at the American flag. Yeah. Like, it's like, oh yeah. Wow. It's a true action movie. Yeah.
It would have been great. I mean, that would have been such a great callback, you know, to, like, have him show up to, like, the days of yesteryear. Yeah. Would have been really fun, but his fingerprints are all over. Like, it, like, the ending of it is very much of a piece with the aforementioned The Rock, Con Air, and Face Off, Holy Trinity.
Yeah. So yeah, we get Demi Moore, and, you know, actress, Addie, they all celebrate, and then cuts to the movie. They get a standing ovation. The Cage, you know, gives the applause. Javi, because that was Javi's idea, the screener. So he's alive and he shows up, and they're gonna go to the after party. They're gonna have an interview, and he's like, no, I think I gotta go home with my family. And so he has a little nice night in with his family.
He learned his lesson. That's sweet
and very cute. They're like, we should watch a movie. And she's like, oh, and, you know, and he's like, no, you pick Addie. She's like, have you ever seen Paddington 2?
Oh, it's so good.
And they watch Paddington 2. That's the movie.
Yeah. Yeah. And, like, the movie ends. Am I allowed to talk a little bit about Pig? Can we talk about Pig at all?
Yeah. Give a
warning for Pig.
If you haven't seen Pig yet, do the skip 30 seconds, maybe skip 60 seconds in case we talk about Pig a little bit more.
Yeah.
That's the warning. I think that this movie and Pig are, like, really, like, well connected. And these two movies basically end the same. where you know, in this movie he's listening to like at the end of Pig, who's singing I'm on Fire?
It's his wife.
It's his wife, right? And so like it's another like quiet moment with his family, that like the camera's just focused on Nicolas Cage as Rob in that movie. And here we're at the end of Paddington 2 with Nicolas Cage with his family just like wistfully staring off into the distance. These two movies that by a lot of metrics could not be any more different, end exactly the same. And ultimately, in many ways, I do think kind of feel very similarly. They're both incredible. Two of Nicolas Cage's very best movies ever, coming out in such quick succession with each other and being so weirdly different from one another, but also weirdly similar, is just really great to me.
I think that thing that he says in the movie, we talked about, like, you know, I'm working, this is my career, you know, this idea. I think he generally, like, the like he does work a lot to, like, I think the stuff he's saying about Addie, like, he can't quite see that the way he's going about some things are wrong, but generally in his heart he does believe, I'm doing this to support people that I love. I just do it as a career. This is like the way I make money, you know, for the people that I love and support the people that I love. And I feel like both of those movies have that's the vibe. It doesn't surprise me that this, like, sort of, I don't want to say late stage, I don't even know how, they're not that old, you know? You know, that's the thing he's going for, the themes that are resonating with Nick Cage. And obviously specifically this one is like written for him, but it would make sense that he's done a movie that's so about, working hard to, you know, ultimately for the people that you love. And I think it works especially well in the theme of this movie, that idea that he is doing it for them, because it sort of debuffs the critique of, like, yeah, you can laugh at me. You can say I'm in bad movies. You can say I'm a bad actor. I think like he's a good storyteller. You know, I like, you know, I'm a storyteller. I'm an actor. Obviously I want to do stuff that's good, but ultimately at the end of the day, what's more important than making a big movie, that's the theme at the end of this movie, that what's more important than going to an interview where I'm going to get recognized for doing this good movie is going home and spending time with my family, is ultimately like the thesis statement of the movie. So it would not surprise me that perhaps however much involvement he has in the writing of this movie, that would coincide with movie choices that he's perhaps making at this point in his life. So, yeah.
I love that the two, you know, as we talk about the two movies, arguably like his most subtle performance followed by like one of the, maybe not his loudest performance, but all in like the loudest overall Nicolas Cage performances, like all the different ones that he has to give in this film. I think that's interesting.
Yeah. Oh, you know what I missed? Ike Barinholtz and Tiffany Haddish die.
Oh yeah, they just die.
They just die. I forgot. Just like, what happens to them? Yeah, they just die in a shootout with the cartoon.
I thought they were gonna come back like in crutches or something, maybe at the end, but
no, we see the bodies. And,
but that's like kind of like, again, like to push the metaphor forward a little bit, is like,
yeah, the execs, so, yeah.
They like the miracle of a great movie is like when the executive producers are like, you know what? You guys know what you're doing. You know what you're doing. You've got a vision for this. We're just going to be out of it. And it's in your hands now.
We're going to get killed.
We're just going to kill ourselves off from the film. And it's now with you. So, like, obviously, ideally, the executive producers don't literally get shot. But in the case of this movie, they are just removed from the picture. And the picture then just gets to continue to be the vision of Nicolas Cage and Javi Gutierrez. And like, that is what happens ideally when, a really miraculous piece of movie making comes out. Certain filmmakers argue that the push and pull between studio executive and filmmaker is like the trial by fire that makes the thing even better. And maybe there's some wisdom to that, but I think that this movie is really arguing very strongly in favor of, like, you know, screw marketing. Like, it's about, like, who cares if there are butts and seats for this one or not? Like, are we going to make like a piece of art, or are we going to
make a piece of crap?
You know? Yeah. And I mean, not for nothing, as we're talking about, this was a $30 million budget movie. And it has so far only earned about $10 million on its opening weekend. So it's not like it's doing great.
That's surprising.
I think this could be something that is a little bit slow way that people could look at this and think it's kind of ridiculous, and that it won't be quite as good as it, that it's a little bit of a joke. And I will also say the box office stuff is so hard to predict these days, because even movies that they'll say like do well, like kind of just make their money back at opening, you know? Yeah. So this is not great, but it also still is a very weird COVID-y, you know, pandemic-y time. I mean, the other interesting thing about this movie, Tom Gormican, who directs this movie, this is his second movie and first one since 2014 that he directs. I'm so interested in how he ended up on that. He's an executive producer of the TV show Ghosted, which I very much liked. I think I canceled after one season. It was Adam Scott. Thank God it got canceled so that he could go on and do Severance. Yeah. He wasn't doing an NBC sitcom. But yeah, very interesting that he just gets pulled sort of out of that and into this. As like, you know, 8 years later, he's doing a Nick Cage movie.
Yeah, I mean, he was one of the writers of this too.
He was.
So, Etten, yeah, you know, and I do think that like this movie very much has the vibe of having been created by the Javi Gutierrez's of the world.
True.
You know,
you think that Tom Gormican is he's the pseudo boss, he's the face of a Joker
job? I suspect so. I suspect so. I do.
He's under investigation by the CIA.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent, which I thought was an absolute delight. Treat, fun, heartwarming, a great movie. Super fun. Is there anything we missed?
It's an amazing runtime. It's like a 147 about. That's, take note, every other movie.
It is pretty great. Yeah, 107. Yeah,
it is like a really excellently paced movie. It's never boring. It's every scene matters. Every scene is fun, and if not fun, then at least important and like you know, impactful. There's really no dead weight. So it's a lean. But it's a lean 107 minutes, but I think a really effective and efficient 107 minutes as well. Like a minute over or under that would probably make a big difference. It's like this movie knows exactly what it is. It is just so sure in its vision. I really was just, I had such a good time with it, but I also was just so impressed by it. And even hearing the plot, like if you just wanted to listen to the podcast and you haven't watched the movie yet, you ask what we've missed, Grace. I think so much of it is just vibe stuff.
Yeah.
This is a movie that like is like hard to spoil, because so much of it is like, what are you going to feel? And like, what is the joy going to be like when you're sitting down in front of it and watching it?
I agree. Yeah. I think on top of that, this movie very impressively, like, it has a lot of like dives deep into the Nick Cage IMDb. Like there are a ton of references. And even I did the AV Club, I think, has an article where it's like all the things, all the Nick Cage references. And like they dig deep, including like, you know, like, Wicker Man is shouted up, Mandy adaptation.
When they said Captain Corelli's mandolin, I was like, that's right. Yeah. You better respect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't particularly like that one.
No, it's horrible, but it's part of the pantheon. Like you can't make like, you know, you have to include it all, basically.
Him saying, yeah, it's underrated. I can't tell if that's him in on the joke or him like actually defending Captain Corelli.
Well, that's where he met his wife.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah.
I guess.
Guarding Tess. They really like, I guess Nick Cage isn't, you know, I suspect he, you know, was in, and I guess you're going to do your research if you're writing a movie that's specifically all about Nick Cage as Nick Cage. But I have one question. Why in the credits is he N-I-C-K?
I think that is just, I think that just exists to like further delineate that this is not actually Nicolas Cage.
It's somewhat of a separate timeline, so to speak.
Right.
Yes.
Because otherwise because sometimes people do get credited as themselves, right? So then you can't actually have it be. Okay.
Yeah, he's not playing himself. You know, yeah. he's playing a hyperbolic. Yeah.
And then that way it could be short for Nicky, or like the shortened version of Nicky, the other character.
The other thing that I was reading recently was that the writers initially they weren't sure that Nicolas Cage wanted to do this.
I've heard that there are some casting rumors out there about who was going to play Nick Cage.
So that there were some thoughts about some other people that could play the part of Nicolas Cage. I think that they threw out, not that this would have ever happened, But like Daniel Day Christian Bale.
You know how I found it? The Daniel Day Lewis casting rumor. I am doing the Criterion Challenge where they give you a movie, a theme each week. And I'm just in a big chunk of like watching movies from time periods. And so I'd never seen There Will Be Blood. So I watched There Will Be Blood. And I was just like, you know, I'm doing the IMDb, I'm doing the Wikipedia thing on Daniel Day Lewis. Like, yeah, I didn't realize he just retired from acting after Phantom Thread. And then I saw after I'd watched, like, yeah, they tried to get him to do Nicolas Cage in a Massive Town. It's like, I love this movie, but it only works if Nick Cage is Nick Cage. And if Daniel Day-Lewis plays Nick Cage and that's what gets him out of retirement, I just would question whether he is okay.
But I would question it for about 5 seconds before I was like fully on board.
You think?
Yeah.
So is this the Phantom Thread of 2022?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
I guess the whole point is that like Nick Cage, he's about to retire, so he needs to like show that he's good at, he needs to like have him be in the movie and get the applause, like, oh, he was in a good movie. But I kind of do want to see the version of this, but we're like, it doesn't work, like the plotting of the movie doesn't, it's perfect that like we transition from the actual scene into the movie scene, but I do want to see the version where they're like casting who's going to play Nick Cage. I want everybody's like, you know what SNL does, like the skits where they just, it's all just these, I just want them to get like 10 celebrities to do Nick Cage impressions, basically. Well, that's the unbearable weight of massive talent.
It's so good. I'm so happy that it's as good as it is. The sweetest thing I heard was from the incredible Brennan Fitzpatrick, who was really happy that I enjoyed it. He said, "I'm so happy you loved it as much as me sitting there watching it, imagining your reaction to it." Brendan said, "I'm so happy it lived up to the hype I built up in my own head for you to see it." And like that feels like a very meta review of this very meta movie. I'm so happy that it lived up to Brendan's hype for how much it would live up to mine, because it totally did. It far exceeded whatever I thought I was getting into. I loved it. I loved it. I can't wait to see it again. Just a totally terrific movie.
Well, one day in the future, you know, the movies do not take long to get from the movie theaters to our streaming services. So folks in the PSR Discord, as soon as we have that release date, put an event up. We'll see you there. The unbearable weight of massive talent.
And I do just appreciate the title a lot more after the fact because of all the pressure that I realized that I was feeling for the movie walking into it.
True. Very true. As we mentioned, The Northman will be our... I feel like there was a bunch of people who did the doubleheader. People saw the double. So I feel like it'll be interesting to chat about The Northman later this week with the wonderful DM Philly. This is very weird. I have to throw it to you to plugs, Josh.
Oh, God. I don't even know.
Do you do other podcasts on this network?
No. Yeah, a couple. You mentioned Adam Scott and Severance earlier. Severance has ended, but we are still talking about Severance at least a little bit. And in fact, I believe, Grace, you have joined the Severance podcast for a special one-off episode by the time that this podcast is coming out. You joined us to talk Severance. We had some more feedback, so we got into more feedback and also wanted to get people excited about Shining Girls, a new Apple TV Plus show that is premiering very soon with Elizabeth Moss, based on the book of the same name, that you are going to be podcasting about with my Severance colleagues, Melissa and Amanda.
Yeah, I'm stealing your crew, Josh.
I'm fine with this. This is great. I'm very eagerly looking forward to being a listener to that triumvirate. Very fun podcast squad. So big fan of that. What else? Grace, just to continue talking about things that we're going to be doing together this week, we're also going to be doing... should I reveal this? Am I allowed to reveal this right now?
Yeah, it. I think was. You can reveal.
Certainly
it.
For the. For we did the top 10 Nicolas Cage movies at the start of April, and now we are about to unleash yet another top 10 list as voted upon by the patrons of Post Show Recaps. We're going to be doing the top 10 Star Wars movies and shows of all time as voted upon by the patrons of PSR. And I have no idea what the results are for that,
No, I don't either. Sometimes I can take a sneak peek, but I brought in a ringer. I brought in Kirk Clark, the tabulator. I was like, can you fix my form for me?
Yeah.
He was like, absolutely, I can. I can make it much better.
Yes.
So Kurt has the results. He's going to send them to me later this week. So I don't even know what's in the running.
So we don't know what that looks like, but the aforementioned DM Philly is going to join us for that podcast as we're revving up some Star Wars month. May the 4th be with you. And May the 20-somethingth, I don't remember which date it is.
May the 2nd, we're going to do.
May the 2nd, we'll do a live watch.
Oh, you're talking about Obi-Wan.
Yeah, May the 20-somethingth. I don't know what the date is on that, but there will be an Obi-Wan Kenobi
TV show. May the 27th be with you.
Yes, yes.
It's the Obi-Wan premiere.
Those are some things to plug. There's so much happening on Post Show Recaps that it's impossible to put your arms around all of it. But incredible stuff, including the Russian Doll podcast that the two of you are doing alongside Marissa, and so, so much more. Very, very, very fun times here on the network. We're having a blast.
Very, very much so. Yes. Ariel, where can people find you?
I am on Twitter at that other Ariel, and I am covering, like Josh just said, coming out of a deep dive into Russian Doll season 2 with you and Marissa, and that's some really fun. Can't wait to for the wrap up show with Dr. Amanda.
Yeah, it'd be great. I'm on Twitter at High From Grace. Winning Time, Shining Girls, yeah, lots of stuff. So check it out. And we will be back later this week in your feeds with coverage of the Northland. Until then, bye-bye.
Bye.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.